Chéir Iluvi Nishmos Ma Franchmo Ben Ava Maria Kohen Chaya Tova Bas Eliezer Mendel Cohen, and also dedicated to all the soldiers, and dedicated to God for keeping us safe. We're picking up in Yechezkel chapter 16, and we're up to verse 63, I believe, if I'm not mistaken. 33 or 63. So we're past halfway in this chapter. And where we got up to last time was God basically castigating the Jewish people in three stages. We did the first stage last week, and God was castigating the people in verse 32 for dreaming. The verse says, "Or Isha Hamanafes Tachas Isha Tikach Ezorim." You are like an adulterous wife who welcomes strangers instead of a husband, or underneath her husband. And we're talking about the idea of God criticizing the Jewish people for being fantasizing about being goyim, fantasizing about being like all the other nations. And that type of theme is going to continue here with stage two, when it goes beyond fantasy, which is in verse 33. And God says to the Jewish people, L'chol zonos yitnu neda, va'at nosatis nodonayich l'chol mehavayich. Prostitutes receive gifts. Prostitutes receive fees. But you gave your dowry, or you gave all your possessions to all your lovers. V'atishchadi osan, and you bribed them, you paid them, l'vo alayich, to come to you. Misaviv b'taznu soich, everywhere you were, and that's because b'taznu soich, because you people have got a perverted nature. And when God's basically saying this, really, when the Jews ended up giving into their fantasies about pagan lifestyles, they wanted to be like all the other nations around them, the Egyptians, the Philistines, the Assyrians, the Babylonians, the Amorites, everybody. They wanted to be like everybody else. K'chol ha'goyim b'eis Yisrael. And they started to prostitute themselves, to worship the pagan gods of all the other nations. They weren't like regular prostitutes. God's been calling them a prostitute all along, but they sold themselves. Because he says here, l'chol zonos yitnu neda, va'at nosatis nedanayich l'chol me'avasat me'avayich. Prostitutes get paid to prostitute themselves, but you paid them. You paid your lovers to come and visit you. Meaning, the culture of prostitution is that a potential customer is willing to pay for the services of a woman because they find the prostitute sexually attractive. But your neighbors, they didn't find you attractive at all. They weren't interested in having any type of social or cultural interaction with you. So, in order to satisfy your fantasy of being like them, of learning their ways, of indulging in their pagan lifestyle, you had to bribe them. You had to pay them to be your friends. You had to flatter them. You had to give them gifts in order that they should share their culture with you. So what did you give them to attract them? So you gave them, as Yechezkel says here, v'at nosatis nedanayich. You gave them your dowry, meaning the chutzpah of it all the affluence. And the brachot, the brachas that God, your husband, bestowed on you on your wedding day, and everything he blessed you with since, you're prepared to give away. Give it to the nations, to the other nations, to share God's bounty with all the other nations. As the Abravanel says here, Nedanayach Mizeh Loshin Nedunya, an expression of dowry. You gave them the dowry that God gave you. You gave God's gifts. The gifts that God gave to you to the other nations around you to attract them. You basically entice them with money and gifts to make them friends. People who don't have any friends, so they do everything they can to attract them, even to the extent where they give them things. But Tishkadi says, O soul, Lavo Elayach Misaviv B'taz Nusayach. So that you ended up bribing these nations to come to you, to interact with you, to share culture with you, to share their pagan lifestyle with you. which is bitzunosayach, which is an indication of your perverted nature. So God says that, and as a result of that, you moved up to stage three, in which you became a uniquely brazen, and not only brazen, but a foolish prostitute, as God finishes his tirade against the Jews here. Vayihibo, verse 34, Vayihibo, hafech min anoshim betaz nosayach. You were the opposite of other women. You solicited instead of being solicited. You solicited from them instead of being solicited, which is the normal way of the prostitutes. V'acharayech lo zunah. U'betziteich esnon. V'esnan lo nitein loch v'atehi lehefech. Instead of being solicited, you solicited. You paid fees instead of being paid fees. And you were just the opposite of everyone else. Now the Gemara, in Avodah Zorah captures the meaning of this verse and really one of the tragic truths about Jewish history. And, this is really the tragic, one of the great tragedies of Jewish history encapsulated in one verse here, that God says. And there's a Gemara here in Avodah Zorah on Daf Tes Zayin, and Daf Yud Zayin on Yud Tes Zayin on the base 16b and Yud Zayin on the Aleph 17a. And here's the backdrop to the Gemara. Rabbi Eliezer HaGadol, who was the head, Rabbi Eliezer HaGadol, who was the head of Beis Shammai and one of the great and the head of the Sanhedrin, one of the leaders of the Sanhedrin, was arrested by the Romans for being a suspected follower of Jesus. The judge, this is the Gemara in Avodah Zorah, the judge, realizing he was innocent, let him go. But Rabbi Eliezer HaGadol was inconsolable when it became public knowledge that he was suspected of being one of the early Christians. They weren't actually Christians at the time. They were more Hebrews, Jews that believed in Jesus. And so that's the backdrop to the story in the Gemara. And the Gemara takes up the story here. Kishabonabeso, when Rabbi Eliezer came home after the judge, the Roman judge released him, because he realized he wasn't a follower of Jesus, which was a capital offense. Kishabonabeso, when he came home, Nichnasu Talmidav Etzlo Lenachamo. His students came over to his house to console him for having been accused of heresy. Which he took as a sign of sin. The Lo Kibel Olav Tanchumim. He couldn't accept their words of consolation. And Rabbi Eliezer, the way to understand the Gemara, it's the way Rashi understands it, and the Rishonim understand it. Rabbi Eliezer HaGadol was troubled by something in relation to his arrest. After all, he should really have been delighted about the fact that he escaped execution. And which the punishment in Rome or the punishment of the Romans for Christians was execution. So he should have been delighted, but he was troubled. So one of his students, Rabbi Akiva, Amalo Rabbi Akiva. So Rabbi Akiva said to him, Rabbi, Tarshini Loma Dova Echod Mimashalim Limdatani. He said, Rabbi, allow me to remind you of something you taught me. So Omalo Emor, so Rabbi Eliezer HaGadol said to him, tell me, what did I teach you? Omalo Rabbi Kiva said to him, Rabbi, Shema minus boli yoder, v'hanoch v'olav nitfeses. Perhaps the words of heresy that came, some you met a heretic and he told you something, and the words that he said were pleasing to you at the time. And because of this, you were held responsible by God. And as a result of that, God punished you by having you arrested. Obviously, you got away with it because you weren't guilty. But maybe somebody, maybe you met a heretic. Maybe you met one of these Christians, early Christians, Hebrew Jesus followers. And he said something to you that was appealing to you and you enjoyed it. So, Omalo, he said, so Rabbi Eliezer HaGadol said to him, Akiva, His Kartani, you're right. You reminded me of something that happened to me once. Pam achas hoyisi mahalach b'shuk, ho'elyon, shel tzipori. He says, I remember I was once walking in the upper marketplace of Tzipori in the north, Umotsosi Echad Mitalmide Yeshu Hanotsri. And I bumped into a fellow who was one of the disciples of Jesus of Nazareth. V'Yaakov Ishkva Sachni Yashma. And his name was Yaakov from the city or the village of Sachania, Kfar Sachania. Omali. And he said to me, Kusub B'Torahschem, it says in your Torah, Lo Sovi Esnon Zona, you shall not bring any payment made to a prostitute into the Beis HaMikdash, that anything that's used as a fee to pay a prostitute is not to be used in the Beis HaMikdash. It's got tumor attached to it. It's got the avak, the dust of Avodah Zorah attached to it. Well, not Avodah Zorah. It's got the avak, the dust of immorality attached to it. So you're not allowed to use that money to buy a korban or to do anything in the Beis HaMikdash. But what about Mahu La Sosimenu Beis HaKnesses LeKohen Gadol? He said that yes, it's true. We know the halacha that the payment made to a prostitute can't be used in the Beis HaMikdash. He says, but what's the halacha regarding using the fees made to a prostitute to construct a toilet for a Kohen Gadol in the Beis HaMikdash? Below Amarti Lo Klum. And I had no answer for him, because after all, it's an interesting question. You're not allowed to use the money to that is used to pay a prostitute, which is kritzis, which is something that is not necessarily adulterous, but it's immoral behavior. And you're not allowed to use that money in the Beis HaMikdash. But what about using it for something that's, you know, earthy, like using the money to build a new toilet for the Kohen Gadol? So he said, and Rabbi Eliezer said, I don't know the answer to that question. So, Omali, Kach Limadeti Yeshu HaNotzri. So the heretic said to me, Jesus of Nazareth told me that it's permitted, that you're allowed to do that. And he learned it from a verse in Micha, in the first chapter of the prophet Micha. It says in the first chapter of the prophet Micha, in verse chapter 1, verse 7, Mi esnon zono kibetza, by the esnon zono yeshuvu, for the fees paid to a prostitute she gathered, and as payment to another prostitute they will return. And he said, Jesus explained the verse, since payments to a prostitute come from a place of filth, let them return to be used for a place of filth. And therefore he derived from that pasuk in Micha that they can be used to build a toilet in the Beis HaMikdash. Now again, it's a very interesting drasha on the pasuk. Kimi esnon zona kibtzah v'ad esnon zona yeshuvu. The fees paid to a prostitute she gathered, and as payment to another prostitute will return. In other words, it goes from one prostitute to another. This money, it never sees the light of it never cleaned. So he says, so the payment to a prostitute is from a place of filth, and let it be used to build a place of filth in the Beis HaMikdash. And he was pleased. He enjoyed. He was pleased to hear that drasha. So that's why he said, you know, it's interesting. He said to Rabbi Kiva, it's interesting. We'll come back to the Gemara in a second, but just a footnote. Interestingly, what Jesus supposedly said is the halacha. Now, which is absolutely unbelievable, because Tosfos there in that Gemara the Tosfos says in that Gemara over there, Nira Dalav Midiraisi Koboi de Pshita Dushari. The question is not one of Torah law, and according to Torah law, this is obviously permitted. So there you see. Anybody asks you a quiz question, do we have a Paskin Halacha like Jesus? So there you go. That's the Gemara. There's the Tosfos there in Avodah Zorah that seems to clearly indicate that we Paskin Halacha like Jesus in this particular instance. But back to the Gemara. And now Rabbi Eliezer tells Rabbi Akiva what happened after hearing Jesus' drosha about the money paid to a zona. So you can use it to build a base akisa. You can use it to build a toilet in the base of Mikdash. The Haneni Adova. He says, and Rabbi Eliezer HaGadol told Rabbi Akiva, he said, I like the drasha from the heretic speaking in the name of Jesus. Al yidei zeh nitfasti laminas. He says, and I think due to this, because of this, I was arrested for heresy by the authorities. But avarti al ma shekosav b'Torah, all because I transgressed what's written in the Torah. It's not actually written in the Torah. It's actually written in Mishlei. It's a pasuk from Mishlei. Harchek me'aleha darkecha zuminus. V'al tikra v'al pesach beisa zuarashus. So there's a pasuk in Mishlei that says, Harchek me'aleha darkecha, remove your way from far from her, which refers to avoiding listening to heresy. V'al tikra v'al pesach beisa. And do not come near to the entrance of a house, of her house. This is a reference to avoiding contact with the ruling authority, in this case the Romans, which conspires to kill its citizens and steal their possessions. And says Rabbi Eliezer, since I, Rabbi Eliezer, ignored the part about avoiding the words of the heretic, I found myself at the mercy of the Roman authorities. And carries on the Gemara. Barabonon hai me esnon zona my dorishpe. With regard to the derivation of this verse by Jesus about using the proceeds of prostitution for making a toilet in the base of Migdash, the Gemara asks, what do the rabbis learn from these words? Like, that's what Jesus said. What do the Talmidei Chachamim, what do the rabbis of the period learn? Me esnon zona, fees paid to a prostitute. So the Gemara answers, Kedarav Chizda. They explain it in accordance with the opinion of Rav Chizda. Dom Rav Chizda called Zona Sheniskeres, Libesov Histocheres. Rabbi Chizda says that what the Pasuk means, Jesus supposedly quoted from Micha, what does it mean? So Rav Chizda says it means that any prostitute who hires herself out to others for money will become so attached to this way of life, this sexually aggressive way of life, that ultimately when others no longer wish to hire her, she will hire others to engage in intercourse with her using the money she received in her practice as a prostitute. So that's what the posuk means. That's what he said the posuk means, the posuk for Mishlei. The posuk that was kimi esnon zona kibsa, but esnon zona yeshuvu. The fees paid to a prostitute she originally gathered, and as payment to another prostitute, there will return. Meaning that, as Rabbi Chista says, that if you live the life of a prostitute, eventually you'll give up the money when you can't attract clients anymore. You'll end up paying for sex, just like people paid you for sex. You'll end up paying for sex yourself. And he says, Rav Chista, how do I know this? This is the correct way of understanding it. Shinema, it says in Yechezkel, chapter 16, our posuk, Ubisiseich esnon ve'esnon lo nitein loch v'tehila lehepech. That you ended up, talking about the Jewish people, you ended up paying fees instead of being paid fees. You were just the opposite of everyone else. And the opinion of Rav Chisra in this Gemara, referencing our verse in Yechezkel, captures and describes the foolish attitude of the Jews throughout history to a T, on many levels. We just desperately want to find favor in the eyes of the nations we live among. That's been our thing. Kechol HaGoyim Beit Yisrael, as we're going to see. The first thing to say here is that there's a few things to say here. I'm not frightened to speak on camera, and on tape. The verse here compares the Jews to a prostitute in that they worship idols. Obviously, we're not talking literally. It's an allegory here. The allegory here is all the sexual activity here is being adulterous and being adulterous in relation to the husband, which is God here. Their worship, however, takes the opposite form of the way in which prostitute is hired. A prostitute receives something, as we know, in return for a depravity whereas the Jews gave their animals as sacrifices and gold and silver as donation to idols, the idols of other nations, and yet received nothing in return. In fact, all the monies, all the gold, all the silver, all the precious stones that the Jews invested in their pagan activity, in building idols and building temples to pagan gods in Yehuda and in Yerushalayim, were ultimately stolen from them by their pagan enemies, who would eventually come to the northern kingdom first, the Assyrians, and the southern kingdom later, the Babylonians. And these enemies would come, send the Jews into exile, steal everything of value that the Jews had. They would destroy the Jews' pagan monuments, and they would use the resulting gold and silver that they'd taken from the Jews to construct their own idols and shrines to their own pagan gods. And that's what God's saying here. You, the prostitute Jew, ended up paying fees instead of being paid. You're just the opposite of everyone else. Meaning the Jews throughout history have been obsessed with this foolish notion. Right up until today. Right up until, what is it, the 15th of April 2024. That if we could just be like the rest of the world, just let us pay our dues to the other nations. Just let us behave like them. Just let us be normal like them. Just let us adopt their customs. Just let us adopt their names. If we do all that, then the world, the nations, the Christians, everybody, will be accepted by everyone else, will be welcomed into the family of nations, and all the anti-Semitism we suffered throughout history would end. To coin a phrase used in the Tanakh, "Kechol Goyim Beis Yisrael." If we could only be like all the rest of the Goyim, so they wouldn't bother us. They wouldn't bother us. Well, we'll come on to Herzl in a second. One opinion was, we want to be like Guatemala. You want to set up a Jewish state, you want to be like Guatemala. No one hates Guatemala, right? No one cares about Guatemala. They just carry on like every other nation. So if we can be, an anonymous nation that behaves like everybody else, so no, everyone forget about us. Well, we know that's not true. What Yechezkel is saying here is that the Jews of the first Beis HaMikdash period were so obsessed with being accepted by their pagan neighbors, and the Jews were prepared to pay the price of entry into the club. They wanted to pay the price. And we know the price in Germany during the Enlightenment period, the price of entry into the club was to convert to Christianity, right? Some of the great composers of Germany, Mendelssohn, Mahler, they were Jews. They converted. They couldn't do anything without being converted. The Jews of the First Temple period were no different. They wanted to be accepted. And they were prepared to pay the price of entry into the club. And what they thought was the price of entry was adopting the pagan religions and pagan lifestyle and pagan cultures and giving gifts and funds and investing in businesses and cultural opportunities to all the nations around them, which they thought would all the nations would think, how wonderful these Jews are. They're investing in us and they're taking on they dress like us and they worship the same as us. And they're adopting our culture and our cultural values. They're just the same as us. Yeah, right. But ultimately, as in First Temple times, as in Second Temple times, as in every single epoch of Jewish history, the pagans and then the Christians and then the Muslims and then everybody else didn't want to entertain having Jews as part of their society. These neighbors made treaties with both kingdoms in the north, and kingdoms in the south, the Jewish kingdom in the north, the kingdom of Israel, and the kingdom of Yehuda in the south. And they made treaties with them and were quite happy to abrogate those treaties when it suited them. And of course, ultimately, these neighbors would eventually turn on their Jewish neighbors, the Assyrians, the Babylonians, everybody, and destroy their cities, murder the Jews, and exile the survivors. A recurring theme in Jewish history. Jews prostituting themselves to ingratiate themselves with their non-Jewish hosts, even converting to Christianity. The last train to Auschwitz contained was almost exclusively a train containing Jews who had converted to Christianity. Hitler didn't care. So Jews prostituting themselves to ingratiate themselves with their non-Jewish hosts, their non-Jewish society, even converting to Christianity and to Islam and to everything else through the ages, thinking that conversion would give them emancipation and equality. The result has always been the same. And this is what God's saying here. The result has always been the same. The neighbor, the friend, the ally, those with a common nationality as you, similar name to you, same language, same education, same nationality. We all support England. We all support Go America. We all support, you're right, all support Australia. We all, when they're playing cricket, we all support South Africa when they're playing rugby. We're part of the culture. We're part of the nation. We're nationalists. We love our country. All that stuff. We got the same education as them. We're the same nationality. We carry flags on the Queen or the King's birthday. All eventually turn on us and say, despite how much we prostitute ourselves to their culture, you are not one of us. And anybody that doesn't believe that, just look at Europe today. Right? Just look at all the, look at France, look at Germany, look at England, look at Ireland. You are not one of us. The message that's coming out loud and clear. Unfortunately, as I just mentioned, we can see today the results of the mistake Yechezkel describes here in today's state of Israel, because the secular Zionists who set up this state never read the script. They never read this verse. Or if they read this verse, most of them were pretty literate, very literate in Tanakh. Golda Meir and David Ben-Gurion knew their Tanakh inside out, but they never really understood this verse. Because if you look at secular Zionism, and I'm being picky here, because this is secular Zionism is just a recurring theme in Jewish history. Secular Zionism is 200 years old, but secular Zionism is nothing new. Secular Zionism has been around as long as the Jewish people have been around, just under different guises. The style, what is secular Zionism? Secular Zionism. Secular Zionism is best defined as international assimilation. It promoted the exact thing that Yechezkel is talking about here. K'chol hagoyim beis Yisrael. A normal nation like any other, secular, built on the Western liberal democratic model, civil rights, no preferred culture, secular citizenship, no preferred language spoken, Hebrew, French, German. If someone like Ben Yehuda could convince the people to speak Hebrew, also good. Location. Where should we have this Jewish state where we can be Kohol Goyim, like all the other nations? In Herzl's Judenstadt, in Herzl's Zionist state, he suggests Palestine. His three major suggestions are Palestine, Argentina, or Uganda. And he writes about Argentina, that Argentina is a large country, mostly unsettled, which already has a large infiltration of Jews, which causes trouble in the country. And therefore, it would be in the interest of Argentina to cede us a small piece of land. Maybe they just give us a little slice of their country so we can find some peace from our exile. What about Palestine? He said, Palestine, Herzl described Palestine as our unforgettable homeland, which probably means that if we would have settled in Uganda or Argentina, we would never have forgotten it. We would never have forgotten our unforgettable homeland in Palestine. Maybe we would have had a Palestine Day once a year, which would have been very nice. Herzl planned to ask just looking back in history now, it just seems completely bonkers. Herzl planned to ask the Sultan of Turkey to cede part of Palestine to the Jews, and in return, what was he prepared to give? Well, we don't really know, but obviously, we could have invested his money for him, the Sultan's money for him. Isn't that what the Jews do best? Failing Palestine, Herzl postulated that anything we can get from the great nations of the empires of the day, like from the British, like Uganda from the British, we would gladly accept it. Herzl imagined that the new state would embody all the modern advanced values of Germany, Austria, France, the UK, and the USA. Herzl's vision excluded all notion of Jewish values. He never mentions the Torah, the Talmud, or any reference to Jewish law anywhere. Now, people say Herzl was a prophet. No, he's no greater prophet than the false prophets at the time of the first Beis Hamikdash. Herzl's predictions, Herzl's prophecies. Herzl predicted his vision would find favor with all the European powers. Why? He writes, because all the European countries have got an anti-Semitism problem. If the governments defended the Jews, they would alienate their anti-Semitic electorate. If the government defended the anti-Semites, they'd risk alienating the Jews and their perceived powerful economic leverage. If they did nothing, they would drive the Jews into the hands of the revolutionaries, the communists, which is exactly what happened to many Jews, particularly in Eastern Europe. Hitler, therefore, imagined that if he arrived on his white horse with his solution being, I will take all your Jews off your hands and plonk them in a country that you'll help create, he would solve their problem, the Jewish problem, and the European powers would be overjoyed and relieved and would offer money, political support and leverage to convince someone to cede the Jews some land and thus solve everybody's Jewish problem. Herzl perceived Zionism as the Messiah for Jews and non-Jews alike that will rid Jews, rid Europe of its Jewish problem. Herzl never envisaged in his wildest nightmare that Europe would conceive of a different final solution to its Jewish problem. Nothing to do with the Jewish homeland, but rather to murder every single Jew on the continent. Herzl predicted that after the establishment of the state, most Jews would leave the diaspora and come to the new state, except, he said, the wealthiest and the most assimilated. Herzl predicted that within two generations, there would be no diaspora at all. Within two generations, to be a Jew would mean to be an Israelite, a citizen of the new state, would now define what it meant to be a Jew, replacing the older, parochial, religious identification of a Jew that was now outdated and irrelevant. These were all of Herzl's predictions and prophecies. Every single one of them was false and has been turned on its head. Europe volunteered nothing except false promises and platitudes. Argentina volunteered nothing. After all, which country in their right mind volunteers to cede a piece of their own country to another? Maybe you want to think about that for a second. Where do you see ever in world history that a right-minded country volunteers to cede a piece of its own country to another country? Well, I can only think of one that's thinking about it. Getting back to the story, the Sultan of Turkey offered nothing. When the state arrived, the vast majority, these are all Herzl's predictions. When the state arrived, the vast majority of the Jews did not return. There is still to this day a profound relationship between the state of Israel and the diaspora that works in both directions. Israel performed heroic actions for the Jews of Russia, Yemen, Morocco, Ethiopia, and other areas of the diaspora. And the diaspora remains an essential support mechanism for the state, not least because it provides nearly 10% of Israel's GDP each year. All of Herzl's predictions for the state were wrong, and here we are in 2024, the pariah state of Israel, the apartheid state of Israel, the state that prostitutes itself to the whims of the secular West, a state that bends over backwards to be Kechol Hagoyim Beit Israel. 2,500 years after this verse was written by Yechezkel, we're still playing the same game. If only we were like the Goyim, everything would be okay. And God says, not at all. That is the road to destruction. And how are Israel and Jews in general, perceived by everyone? Still the outsider. to the communists with the capitalists, to the capitalists with the communists, with the apartheid state, with the colonial state, with the aggressor, with the child killers, with the one nation that's decried by the United Nations and the Human Rights Council as occupiers of other people's lands. Jews cannot be viewed as victims, as they are part of the white colonial patriarchy. So that anti-Semitism is not really a thing. It's not really racism at all for them. And that's why people can't understand it. We can't understand it. How they can't see that anti-Semitism is alive and well and kicking in Europe, because they don't accept anti-Semitism as a thing. It's not really racism. After all, in today's world, there's a different type of anti-Semitism. The Jews are white. The Jews are white. The Jews are white are part of the colonial patriarchy. They're the oppressor, not the oppressed. So here we are, 2,500 years after after Yechezkel wrote this verse, still playing the same tune, still humming the same melody to the rest of the world. G'chol ha'goyim v'eish Yisrael, when will the Jewish people listen? The secular Zionists weren't the first to make this mistake. Obviously not. The Spanish Jews thought they were good Spaniards until the pogroms of 1391, which killed 100,000 Jews, and the expulsion in 1492. And even those Jews who converted to Catholicism were hounded by the Inquisition for 400 years. Remember, not so long ago, many German Jews called themselves Germans of the Mosaic persuasion, but Germans first, until the mid-1930s. There are multiple examples of this attitude throughout Jewish history, right up until our current president of Israel tries to sing the same song, K'chol ha'goyim beit Yisrael, we're exactly the same as you, why do you hate us? And it becomes increasingly difficult for Jews to live a normal life today, in the year 2024, even in the liberal democracies. Anyone that's not can't see it is blind. Jewish students on campus, Jewish elected officials, and just regular Jews going about their daily lives are harassed and attacked for being Jewish. Anti-Semitism is alive and well in every country of the world. And at the end of the day, the other nations, our neighbors, our friends, our allies, our co-nationalists, the people we go to school with, the people we went to school with, at the end of the day, they'll pick us out of the crowd. History has proved it. Empirical evidence shows it. At the end of the day, when push comes to shove, they'll pick us out of the crowd, however much we prostitute ourselves to them and to their way of life and to their culture and to their often perverted moral compass. We just want to be like them, whatever goes. But the starting point is here. The starting point of all this is here, Yechezkel, with God's warning to the Jews of the first base of Mikdash Erit, 2,500 years ago. God said it. God put it out there. Vayehi b'chor hefet min anoshim, b'taz nusayah. You're the opposite of all the other women. Ve'acharayich lo zuno v'sisech esnon, v'esnon lo liten loch v'tehi lehefet. Instead of being solicited, instead of having all the nations come after you and they want you and they want to be with you and they want to learn from you and everything else, you go running after them. You're prepared to pay them. You'll change your name. You'll do anything they want just to be like them. And he says God, you're just the opposite of everybody else. Meaning ultimately, God will never, and this is the key element of this verse, ultimately, God will never, ever, ever allow the Jews to become K'chol ha'goyim beis Yisrael. It's just not on the table. It never has been, and it never will be. We are never going to be like other nations. Whatever we do, we can all convert to Christianity. Every one of us. Walk down to the baptismal font and convert to Christianity. Our grandchildren will still be called Jews in two generations' time. God will not allow it. The Jews will always be the outsider. And if K'chol ha'goyim beis Yisrael is what the Jews are demanding, then, at the time of the first base of Migdash, if you Jews, says God, want to prostitute yourselves to the morals, the ethics, the lifestyle, the culture of the rest of the world, then here, says God, in the next few verses, I'm going to show you what you can expect from me, and it's not pretty. And this is a message going out 2,500 years ago, and what follows is exactly what has happened to almost every generation of Jews that have gone down this path. Kechol HaGoyim Beis Yisrael. And as we're going to see, it's not pretty. This is the ultimate message to the Jewish people. We just want to be loved. Yeah, you just want to be loved. We just want to be British. We just want to be German. We just want to be Polish. We just want to be Americans. We just want to be Australians. Right? God says nothing doing. Verses 35 and 36. Lochein zono shimi devar Hashem. Therefore, you prostitute. Listen to the word of God. Kona Hashem Elokim. So says the word of God. Yan hishofach nechushtech v'tigoleh erevoseh. Because your sexual organs poured out. We'll see what that means in a second. Remember, the reference to sex here is typically a reference, an allegorical reference to Avodah Zorah, for deserting God and adopting other cultures. Again, Kama Hashem Elokim Yan Hishofech Nechushtech V'Tigoleh Erevoseh. Because your sexual organs poured out, offering your nakedness, V'Taznusayich Al Ma'avayich, V'Al Kol Gilului Tovasayich V'Chidmei Bonayich Asher Nosati Bohem. Offering your nakedness to your lovers in prostitution, and for all your repugnant idols, and for the blood of your children, which you offered to the Nosat Lohem, which you offered to them, to the idols, which is to Molech. You murdered your children in the name of Avodah Zorah. So it's very, very strong words. And as Zibar Ben El says here, God now lists the indictment for which the Jews of Yehuda will be punished, and for which the Jews of every generation that want to play this game will be punished. After recounting in the first part of this chapter the kindness that God had done for the nation and what the nation had committed against him in return, in verses 1 to 35, God now explains the punishment that he has decreed against the nation. But first, the indictment. What's the indictment? So this is how we read this verse. It starts off, Kama Hashem Elokim. This is what God says. So the first thing that God says is, Yan Hishofech Nechushtech. Because your sexual organs poured out. Now he is holding nothing back here. The Tanakh is not worried by the fact that, you know, it's talking in sexual terms. The first charge on the indictment against the Jewish people has got many elements. So Rashi's approach to this is the idea that the female sexual organs pouring, that's what it says here, because Yan Hishofech Nechushtech, because your sexual organs poured out. So Rashi says the idea of the female sexual organs pouring represents the anticipation, the excitement, the arousal before sexual contact that causes blood flow to the genitals to increase, triggering the release of fluid from the cervix, which provides lubrication during sexual activity. What God says here is that even before you Jews got involved in the paganism of your neighbors, you became excited, aroused, energized by the prospect of committing adultery against God. And as the Ramchal says here, well, he doesn't say it here. As the Ramchal says in Masilis Yeshorim, which is the path of the just. Just excuse me for 1 second, I'll take a drink. Yeah, as the Ramchal says in the Masilas Yesharim, in the 11th chapter of the Masilas Yesharim, Be'inyan HaMachshava, regarding thinking about illicit activity, particularly illicit sexual activity, Kvar Amru B'tchilas HaBraisa Shalanu, Chazal already mentioned at the beginning of the Braisa, as the book Masilas Yesharim is based on one Braisa in Avodah Zarah, which is the Braisa of Pinchas Ben Yair. So he says, Kvar Omru B'tchilas HaBraisa Shalanu. He says, we already mentioned at the beginning of our Braisa, V'nishmarta mikol dovar ra. You have a Jew, or human beings actually, but Jews in particular, have to guard yourself against every evil thing. Shlo yaharer odom bayom, v'omru od. That Pinchas Yair says that a person should not have impure sexual thoughts in his heart, and thus bring himself to have impurity, illicit sexual activity at night, which is based on a Gemara in Ksuvos. That the more you think about it, the more you go for it. And he writes that Chazal, the Ode, he says, Yuma, Kaf Tes Omad Aleph. He says, furthermore, the Gemara says in Yuma, on that Kaf Tes on page 29, Hirhurei Aveira Koshimei Aveira, B'simonech Recha Debisra. Contemplating a sin is worse than the sin itself. And your mnemonic for that is Recha Debisra, the odor of the beef. And what the Ramchal is saying here, the smell when you're hungry, the smell of the barbecue is more appetizing than actually eating the meat. Like you, it really drives you mad when you're very hungry and you can smell the barbecue, so it drives you mad, and it's even more exciting. Well, not exciting, but it's even more powerful than the actual taste of the food. And as he says, furthermore, he says, one of the confessions we make on Yom Kippur, Al Chet Shechatonu V'necha Baritzas Raglayim Lahara. People might, you just read past this on Yom Kippur. But for the sin we committed before you by running to do evil. And the Chofetz Chaim, he is not quoted by the Ramchal, but the Chofetz Chaim says on this quote by the Ramchal, the running, the anticipation of sinning requires confession and atonement, even if you don't succeed in sinning. Just the thought, just thinking about getting excited about the sin, is a sin in itself. And he said, this is the first thing that God's saying. Yan hishafech nechushtech. Your sexual organs poured out. It's a crude, almost crude, idea that you were aroused. You're
Harry,
aroused. Yes.
what's the connection between nechushtech? I mean, it's the Hebrew word we use for copper,
Yeah.
nechoshet.
Well, we'll
What's the
come to it.
connection?
We'll come to it. We're not. Yeah. Who's writing this general? The concept of people is will is much smaller than we imagine. I don't understand what your question is here. Joan, what point are you making? No. Okay. Okay. Not sure what you're saying. As far as what you said, David, don't worry
Muted.
about what?
Mary, she's muted. You can't hear her.
Yeah, I know. Well, she's muted. I can't hear her. So if she unmutes, she can tell me what she was thinking.
I guess what I'm talking about is if you're saying that God is not allowing the Jewish people to do these things, they're not going to be allowed. That means that we don't have free will.
No, of course we have free will. It's not our free will that's being impinged upon. God's not going to allow, will not allow the nations of the world to accept us.
I thought you're
God,
saying God's not going to allow us to assimilate to the
he
brain
won't. He
others.
won't. He won't. Not because we don't want to, and we don't do our very best to try and do so,
Right, so it's not letting us. It's
but
not
he
letting
won't.
us.
It's the nations that will never accept us. That's what he's saying.
But
You won't allow.
doesn't he make us not make them not accept us
Yeah,
or
that's
not?
got nothing to do with our free will. That doesn't impinge on our free will.
Well, okay, so you're saying this is not about free will. What about ultimately God taking away the temptation of a avodah zarah from us. That
so it's not it later on it wasn't just avodah zarah, was it? I mean, Catholicism, okay, Catholicism is avodah zarah, but Islam isn't. It's a temptation to be like the rest of the world. It morphed, and it always morphs.
Right.
It morphs through the ages. And God will create the circumstances where the nations of the world will hate us for a multitude of reasons. They'll hate us because we're the communists, because we're the capitalists, because we're the Jews, because we're the monotheists, because we got all the money, because we control this, because we control that, because we're weak, because we're strong. Whatever it is we are, they hate. And God will enforce that. So that whatever efforts we make to be just like everybody else, God will thwart it.
But what about that hatred? You can argue the source of that is chosenness. And what we're saying
that's a completely,
we don't want to be chosen.
No. That is a completely different issue. Chosenness is a completely different issue. It's one of the reasons for anti-Semitism, the idea that we claim we're chosen, right? And the idea of chosenness is misunderstood by everybody. The idea of chosenness implies in English that you're special. But special how? Like you can have somebody that is, you know, handicapped. He's also special. And he's also been chosen by God for something. But that doesn't mean that chosenness doesn't mean better. Well, chosen for something. Chosen means responsible. I don't want to hold this year back. If you want to continue this discussion, we can continue this discussion on WhatsApp. And as regards Mr. Barrett, we're going to come to this expression when we look at the Malbim. But just getting back to what the Chofetz Chaim said here. He said the first thing on the indictment here, God says, is Yan, the anticipation of doing the Aveira. That's the first charge. As the Chofetz Chaim says, Al Chet Shechotonu L'Fanecha Baritzas Raglaim L'Ora. We clap our chest on Yom Kippur for the sin we committed by running to do an Aveira. Getting excited. Can't wait to do it. And the anticipation of sinning requires confession and requires kapora. It requires vidui and requires kapora. Even if you don't succeed in doing the Aveira, even if God gets in your way. So that's the approach. That is the approach of Rashi. That's the approach of Rashi to the first part of the indictment. What Malbim's approach is this. We'll finish off with the Malbim's approach and then go on to the third charge. Oh, the Malbim says here, the third, we'll deal with the Malbim's approach and then we'll pick up on the second and third charge on the indictment in this verse next time. The Malbim says the word nuchushter has two connotations. Nuchushter, he says, me'inye nochosh v'nichush. That he says, Hainu shenishpach ha'oros v'chamas nochosh shaloch, o me'inye nuchushim v'kshufim. Either you people were desperate to experience the excitement of disobeying God that egged on Chava in the Garden of Eden, like the Nachash, that's the language of Nuchushter, the snake that tempted you to taste the forbidden fruit, or you were driven to indulge in Nichush, when Nichush is from the language of exotic supernatural sorcery. It comes from the language, as Mr. Barrett said, of Nechoshes, which is copper, which is one of the items of Avodah Zarah that was used in the desert, that Moshe Rabbeinu put on the wall to wean them off idol worship, which was made of copper. So he says the Malbim, Inya Nochosh V'Nichosh. There are two charges here. One, that you allowed yourselves to be taken in, to be seduced, to taste the forbidden fruit. That's the language of Nochosh, a snake. Or you were driven to indulge in some Nichosh. You're excited by the exotic, the supernatural, the sorcery, the cultish activity that you saw going around you. But and the verse continues, but Tigoleh Erevoseich Betaznusaich Almeavayach, offering your nakedness to your lovers in prostitution. This is the second charge on the indictment. As the Malbim says, you let your desires get the better of you, and you acted on your impulses to commit adultery against God. But at first, it was only Almahavayich, as the verse says. Those pagans and pagan rituals you were particularly attracted to. Mahavayich, you were picky, you were choosy. You decided who you were going to follow, which types of paganism that you were going to follow. That's what it says. V'tigaleh erbosech betaz nusayach al mahavayich. You were choosing, right? You picked and chose who you were going to, which religions and which paganism and which avodah zorahs you were going to be involved in. But later on, the verse says, after that, I'll call Gilulei Tovasayach. And for all your repugnant idols, meanings you Jews started off involving yourself in activities that were exciting and enjoyable, but then you graduated, right? You were very choosy at the start, but as the Malbim says, Helesh Zonisa Imaim Baderach Hefkeiras, and call over Be'inyin Meguol Matua. Eventually, you made yourselves Hefka, anybody's, so that you were prepared to indulge in any type of pagan activity, however disgusting, however immoral, however shocking, with any pagan or any pagan nation that happened to be passing by. And this leads on to the fourth part of the indictment, the last words of this verse, of verse 36. Uchidmei bonayich asher nosat lohem, and for the blood of your children which you offered to them, to the idols, meaning you eventually became so depraved, you were so involved with every single type of pagan worship, adulterous behavior, sexual perversion, and everything else, that you're at rock bottom in terms of your moral compass. You became so depraved that you're prepared to sacrifice your own children to the idols of Molech. And that, says the Malbim, is the natural outcome of allowing the Nochosh, which is the first words in the indictment, the Nuchushteich. The idea of allowing the Nochosh, the snake from the Garden of Eden, and the Nichush, the exotic and the supernatural, to control your life. That you eventually, you go downhill very, very quickly. And like a drug addict, you end up in the gutter with nothing. Covered in your own urine, in your own vomit. And you've hit rock bottom. And God says, this is the indictment. Four charges on the indictment. And charge number one, anticipation. You got very excited. And then you started to get involved. You were seduced by the forbidden fruit and you tasted it. It was exotic. It was not, you were tempted like a nachash, like the nachash tempted you. And you were tempted by the nichush, by the exotic, by the supernatural. And eventually, and so you chose some lovers, you chose some nations to be like. You wanted to be like the Germans, you wanted to be like the French, cultured like the French and like the Germans. And eventually, it didn't matter who you were with. It didn't matter. You were prepared to do everything. You're prepared to be Catholics, you're prepared to be Muslims, whatever got you on in life, whatever. But eventually that leads to the fourth charge on the indictment. And that's really, if you take it out of context, not literally, in the context of the first temple period, it's that you murdered the blood, you sacrificed the blood of your children, which you offered to the idols. In the time of the first Beis HaMikdash, that was literal. That's what they did. They offered their children to the idols. They burnt them alive. But in the context of our generation, we also do exactly the same thing. We don't give our children a good a Jewish education, and in two or three generations, we've killed them. Not physically killed them, but spiritually killed them, because they're gone. They don't know Judaism from Hinduism. America's the greatest example, but it's not the only example. And that's what it means. Uchidmei bonai v'shenosati lahem. The blood of your children, which you offered to them. You're prepared to sacrifice the spiritual life of your own children to fit in with everybody else, to fit in with the culture you're living in. And says, God, I won't tolerate it. I won't tolerate it. And here comes God's retribution. Here comes not God's retribution, but here comes God's message for all generations on this issue, which is we'll have to wait 2 weeks for. It's verse 37, and this is where it really, you know, I mean, it's been hard to read and hard to explain. Not hard, it's hard mentally to, and because it's all something that we can all relate to. It's something that we can't deny. That's been at the epicenter of the Jewish experience throughout the last 2,500 years, despite the warnings. We don't care about the warnings. We're quite happy. We're quite happy until we're not, right? Until we're not. Until we have October the 7th, I suppose. Then we start thinking about it again. Anyway, there we are. That's the situation. And we'll pick up, please God, in two, three. When is it? Larry still here?
Oh, 3 weeks.
3 weeks. 3 weeks time. So that will be... 3 weeks time. The
6th of May.
The 6th of May. Okay. Everybody should have a kosher chag and a freilich chag. And I don't know if it's a freilich chag, but everyone should have a great chag, a wonderful time. Enjoy your Seder night. Enjoy your family. Enjoy your children, grandchildren, etc., etc. And we'll see you, please God, in 3 weeks' time in health and happiness. Verse 37.
Thanks, Harry.
And we'll see what happens. Call to everybody. Thanks for joining.
Thanks,
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks,
everybody.
Bye-bye.